Hi, I'm Dr. Akiva Down.
And I'm Rabbi Avi Green.
And welcome to Interesting Questions.
In this podcast, we'll be addressing issues that are philosophical, religious, and psychological in nature.
We will be focusing on that which is considered to be controversial, and there may not be a right or wrong answer. So we are hoping that our discussions will yield more questions for your Shabbos table.
Hello, and welcome to our Thursday edition of Interesting Questions. This one, I'd like us to talk about identity. And what brings that about is, as all of us know, we recently celebrated Pesach, when that really kind of marks the transition and the building of who we are as a people, right? We were slaves in Egypt, and that was our identity. And then for 40 years, we wandered the desert, the wilderness, all of the above. I have a hard time believing it wasn't very hot there and wasn't dry and arid, because we've been there. And there wasn't quite the irrigation system set up yet. But the reality is again, so we were building that identity. And I think that really hits home, because that's an important aspect of what I find that I do professionally. I see people who struggle to identify who they are, to know what they identify as, and what the different parts are of the pie that makes them up. And so I think that warrants a discussion. Who are we? What is our identity? Do we have just one, or do we have a number of them? And what do we do when one of those pieces of our identity shifts? How do we deal with it? How do we change? How do we tolerate? And what do those growing pains look like? Do we have to wander the wilderness for 40 years trying to figure it out?
So I feel like you're much more qualified to answer those questions than I am. But I'll tell you what I think, for whatever it's worth. I think we do have multiple identities, some of them being stronger than others. And so, you know, when I think about myself, I think about my identity as a father and parent. I think about myself, my identity as a child of my own parents. I think of myself as a teacher. I think of myself as a rabbi. I think of myself as a community leader. And there are overlaps in several of those Venn diagrams, but at the same time, I think that there are parts of our identity that change by necessity as we grow and get older and become more mature. We may see ourselves as upstarts when we're younger and grow into more traditional thinkers or non-traditional thinkers, as the case may be.
So, Avi, what about the fact that, I'm going to point out, just because we know she doesn't listen anyway, you left off the identity as a husband. It's okay. But you also, interestingly, and I want to pick on this very purposefully, you didn't talk necessarily about an identity as an individual. You talked about how your identity relates to others. And I think that's really important, because if that changes, right, if you, as to the children grow, right, if you only relate as a father, knowing where you're at as a father, if you only relate as an educator to one particular set of student or as a pillar in the community, as within only one community, then what does that say? And is that an individual identity? Is there such a thing as individual identity, or is the individual identity the sum of the parts?
So part of me wants to say I don't spend enough time alone to know what my individual identity is. It may only happen when I'm sleeping. Maybe I identify as a sleeper. But I think that part of it definitely changes, right? Having lived in multiple communities, my role as a leader has changed. My role as an educator has changed. As my children have grown, my role as a father has changed. And my role as a husband has changed. And I think that's to be expected, right? In other words, if you live in a small Jewish community, as I have at one point, and you're asked to do 150 different things because that's what they need, and you happily do it, great. You then move to a much larger Jewish community where those particular needs may not be as great, and there are fewer needs, but there are other roles you can play, and so you take those on. And I think that the details of the identity may change to a certain extent, but I'm not sure that the core of that identity, if I said my core as a parent is to protect my children. Now, that looks very different when they're 3 to 7 years old and part of my job is to make sure they don't run out into the street when car is coming, versus when they are 17 to 23 and my job is to encourage them in their growing up and in their decisions of finding a spouse and finding a job and educating themselves and making life choices. And so the role has changed, but the core of protecting my family, protecting my children, has not. I still want to help them figure out what's best for them and protect them from things that are going to hurt them either physically or emotionally. If I look at my role as a leader in a community, so in some cases that may take the example of leading services, or it may take the example of leading teaching within a shul, and in other places they may not have that need, and so it takes other it takes on other ways of expressing itself. So is it possible, Akiva, that while we agree that things in one's identity can change, the core of those, even though they may change, remain the same?
I think that in many ways they have to, if one is to maintain a healthy sense of self and a healthy transition. It reminds me when we were talking about this topic, you mentioned about the idea of, you mentioned about your rabbinical identity, and I said, well, you're always a rabbi, and you said, well, not if I move to a different community, or not if they don't recognize my rabbinical authority. And I said, no, you're still a rabbi, that doesn't change. And I think that that kind of thing, if that is held firm and known, right, we can use the example of, you mentioned your father, who was also a rabbi, who was retired, and yet he's still a rabbi. He's still, that cannot be removed from who he is, what it means to be a rabbi, the desire of learning, the desire of sharing that knowledge, the pieces that come with perhaps needing to share information when one sees a good opportunity, because I can't separate so much the idea of being a rabbi from an educator, in part because I think that
the two most are definitely tied.
Correct. Yes, and so it's kind of one of those things where, yeah, but I think if you were to go into a place and say, all right, they all say I'm not a rabbi, and so I'm not going to be a rabbi, then what would you be? And maybe that's why we did struggle when we left Mitzrayim. Because you look back, right, when we're learning and we're revisiting those experiences, and we say, how could it be? You just witnessed 10 makot, and you don't see that there's someone there, there's God is there protecting you, and how do you not get it? Well, because that's a different mentality. That's a mentality that we have now. So, and that is where we see people struggle. That is where we see people have a difficult time.
So to that point, there are times when people's identities change by necessity. I'll give a couple of examples. Some of them may be happy times, right? So if someone is graduating from high school or from college, and now no longer sees themselves in the identity of a student, right? We all want to be lifelong learners, hopefully, but they may not identify as a student. Or perhaps it's a more unfortunate situation when someone has had a loss of a spouse or someone else in their family, and so they lose that identity, at least in an active sense. What are the ways that someone might identify that, and how might they deal with that?
It's a loss. You have to grieve that loss. All losses need to be grieved, and we often don't think about a loss unless it's related to a death. But we can grieve a move. We can grieve a transition. We can grieve a shift, a change. And with all of these pieces, you know, it does beg the question, because one of the things that got me thinking about this was the Shabbos HaGadol drash that we got, and how it really, in part, one of the things that stuck with me is this idea of maybe we have, in some ways, too much choice in what we want to identify ourselves as. And I don't mean any one thing in particular, but I mean the idea that we can let a child say they're not going to continue as a student, right? A child's going to say, nope, I'm done. I don't want to learn anymore. I don't want to go back. I don't want to keep going to school, and so I'm not participating. I choose to exit this arena. I think that that's a misunderstanding of what it is to be a student, because I think that no matter what, the idea of being a lifelong learner, it's not unique and it's not special to only certain groups of people or certain people. We all constantly learn, whether it's learning in a book or learning how to socialize or learning what it is. I think that the idea of allowing someone that opportunity to say they're going to give up on this piece of who they are in some way shrinks who they are.
Well, I'll agree with you when it comes to learning in general, but on the other hand, when someone completes their education at a particular institution, right, they may not even be saying, my education is completed, but I will no longer be a student at this institution, right? I'm now becoming an alum of this institution. And I have a lot of, right, we know, especially when it comes to colleges, people have strong ties and affiliations to the universities to which they attend, and a lot of school pride and a lot of connection. And so leaving that institution may be bittersweet, right? It may be a loss in the sense that I can't believe I'm not going to be here anymore, but it's also the joy of I've completed this milestone in my life, and I'm now ready to move on to what's next.
Well, yeah, Avi, that's just grieving. Remember, grieving is not just sadness. It's there's the five stages of grieving, which, even though they come out in that very easy to remember mnemonic of Dabda, it's not in any particular order. It could be Baded or Badada, what have you. I can't pronounce any other combinations, I think, but and those would be denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and acceptance. And if we think about some time that we've ever lost something, sometimes it's easier to think of losing someone because I think that's just where our minds go to. But that transition period, that figuring things out, it's not uncommon to be in a Shiva home and to hear the Avil talking and they'll smile, they'll tell a funny story, they'll remember something that was enjoyable, and they'll talk about that. They're not happy the person's gone, but they have positive memories and they have positive experiences, and that is absolutely a healthy part of the grieving process. So I think that, yes, transitioning and grieving from that transition is absolutely imperative to healthy continuing of growth and identification. But I do think that, again, this new age idea of let people decide for themselves doesn't always work if we don't give reasonable structure. You know, if you had a student who came to you and said, "That's it, I've decided I'm not going to continue, I'm old enough, my parents said it's my choice, I'm not going back, I'm done." And you might, I assume, start with, "Well, are you sure it's not just this school?" You may even move on to saying, "What about a GED? That way you can at least have a high school equivalency and you can move on to other things if you want. Or have you considered trade school?" All these different ways of, you wouldn't just, I assume, say, "Yeah, it's probably best you give up on the idea of learning anything new altogether."
Right, and part of that is a looking out for the best interest of that student and thinking about what might help them, considering we know about the world around us and that in order to have marketable skills, you need to continually be learning. But I imagine there are parts of identities that we would want to help people close off. So if someone viewed themselves as I'm a loser, I'm a drug user, that's who I am. I can't imagine that's a positive identity trait, or component of identity that we would want that person to continue. It's something we would want to try to extinguish.
It's funny you mentioned that, Avi, because the immediate thing that came to my mind was, "Hello, I'm so-and-so, and I'm an addict." And I agree with you, because I think that in our collective society, we view the stigma associated with the term addict. And I try and work with people on that because of that very stigma. At the same time, there has been an explanation to me, again, lifelong learner, that there is also part of that identity that comes with the lived experience and the understanding of this is what I went through and this is who I am, and I can't hide part of me in order to better other parts of me. And so there is meaning behind even those seemingly derogatory terms.
But, you know, I realize we're talking about certain things, and in some ways it seems a little bit easier. It's a little easy to say, okay, well, somebody says they don't want to be a learner anymore. Of course, we've got to squash that one. But how many people do we know whose parents told their children, it's okay, you don't have to be religious. You don't have to practice. You don't have to learn about it at all. I have many friends whose parents did not offer them the opportunity to learn about whether or not they wanted to practice whatever their religion was. Their parents didn't practice. Whether or not their parents were knowledgeable and then decided seemed to be irrelevant. And I think that that's one of those things where maybe that's one of those that it's not okay to give the option. Maybe it's only okay once you've made an educated choice to come up with that option. And then again, to make sure that you foster beyond the next generation, right? So just because you became knowledgeable and decided, okay, this isn't for me, doesn't mean that the next generation shouldn't also have that same opportunity.
So I think you've wandered into an area that may be so large it may be another conversation for us, which is we all brainwash our children in one way, or probably in multiple ways, and not in other ways, and that is because of what we hold to be important for us. And when my children challenge me on that, I go, well, I didn't give you a choice whether to have table manners. I taught you and brainwashed you that this is the way we do things. We eat with a fork and knife. And that's the right and appropriate way, so that when you go to somebody else's house, you know what to do. And hopefully at our house, you do the same. So the same could be true of Judaism. The same could be true of learning to play a musical instrument. The same could be true of learning a foreign language, of being a traveler. And sometimes we find those things on our own later in life, through friends or through other experiences, or by reading about them. But I think that there is overall there are things as parents that we decide we want our children to know about and to identify with, and therefore we push them into it.
I just want to take this opportunity to clarify. You're describing teaching, Avi. Brainwashing is taking one subset of learned information and overriding that to be something completely different. When we teach our children to have table manners, or about religion, or about the value of being well-rounded, learning other languages and about other cultures, learning to play an instrument, learning that, learning how to cook, learning how to grocery shop, learning how to budget, that's not brainwashing. That's just teaching. If you have taught your children to have proper table manners, and then they have joined an organization that teaches them that all of that was wrong, and instead we must do this, and overwrites it through possibly the use of some additional tactics or chemicals, then that would be brainwashing. Brainwashing has a negative connotation, even though it maybe shouldn't.
I was going to say it has a much sexier sound to say we brainwash our children than to say we teach them. And in some ways, I think we do brainwash them, because especially for components of Judaism, I'm trying to overwrite what the rest of society is telling them. Right? We are a family where we watch TV, and so my children have seen some of the films and television shows that come out in December that are connected to Christmas. And so I work actively to overwrite those and to say, we don't sing those songs in our house, right? We don't celebrate that holiday.
Avi,
What days of the week were your children born?
I'm not sure. I could tell you offhand. I'd have to figure it out.
Okay. Did they all experience a Shabbos within the first one or two Shabbosim that they were born?
Sure.
Were they watching TV already?
At that age, no.
Okay, so what you're saying is you try and prevent outside society from brainwashing your children, not the other way around. And I bring that up not to nitpick, but in fact because it's important, because that's the point. The point is that we are viewing in some ways these activities that we are doing with our children or with whoever as I'm indoctrinating them, I'm brainwashing them, when in reality we are trying to create a structure and a construct by which we decide. And again, I think that's part of what we're talking about, is it is okay to decide for people before they are at the age with which they should be making the decisions what is right and what is wrong for them. And preventing that from being changed and overwritten is, in fact, we are preventing brainwashing. So I think that the movies that come on in December and the songs and all the beautiful, exciting lights, because our Festival of Lights can't be celebrated with lights, right, that's the brainwashing. That's the attack and the assault on the identity that we've created.
So this takes me to our question for the week. How do you brainwash your children?
Thank you for listening.
If you'd like to reach us, you can reach us at iqdiscuss@gmail.com. We look forward to hearing from you and responding.